Yep, it's February, right? It's funny to hear everybody say, can you believe it's already February? Because it just seemed like yesterday we were celebrating New Year's. And Wyatt and Willie woke up on Friday, right, and rubbed his eyes and thought, where's the time gone, right? Yep, Willie, you can put on the snooze alarm and curl up for some more shut-eye. But spring will be here sooner than you think, right? It just seems like yesterday, it was a warm summer evening, and Diane and I were resting on a blanket spread on the lawn of the Molson Amphitheater in Toronto, listening to the prophetic words of an old rocker, Steve Miller, singing, time keeps on slipping, slipping, slipping into the future. Right? Time keeps on slipping, slipping into the future. He said, I want to fly like an eagle to the sea. Fly like an eagle, let my spirit carry me. I want to fly like an eagle till I'm free. Oh Lord, through the revolution, feed the babies who don't have enough to eat. Shoe the children with no shoes on their feet. House the people living in the street. Oh, there's a solution. Friends, Miller appeals to the real hope within him that things do not have to remain as they are. There are very real opportunities to participate in creative and healing responses to present and apparent insurmountable circumstances. Now, I know that we're all still a bit sore from the exile-like experience of the pandemic. It still has a painful hold on many who are grieving the loss of the pre-pandemic, so-called pre-pandemic, good old days. Remember the good old days, right? Like those the older prophet Isaiah was reaching out to in our First Testament lesson. Those he was wanting to encourage, who were emerging from a season of exile. God has been speaking to us in previous weeks, imploring us and inviting us to turn on and to tune in, right? To step up and step out. Know who and whose we are. And to follow God's Son. Oh, and by the way, God's saying to us, I want you to spread your wings and fly with me. I'm calling you from sore, like sore, to soar. And you'll recall the circumstances in which the people of God found themselves. All had been lost. By the waters of Babylon, they laid down and wept for Zion. They were downcast, melancholy, sticks in the mud. And Isaiah was imploring and inviting them to wait upon the Lord, the everlasting God, who does not faint or grow weary. The storyteller's companion to the Bible describes Isaiah's prompting this way, saying the prophet chides Israel for being timid and untrusting. Israel, in a moment of despondency, had said that God does not care about him. It is not difficult to see why Israel is depicted as saying this. The exile was an enormous disorientation for the people. So many elements of what they had held as essential to their tradition and religion were now gone and inaccessible. And it sounds a bit akin to the posture of many, many church people today. Those who are mourning the good old days, right? When everybody and their dog were baptized members of the flock and sang, you know, the good old hymns and didn't shop on Sunday, right? Isaiah's audience bemoaned the new reality of no temple, no sacrifice. The very things by which one could reach God no longer existed. And gone too was a reigning king, you know, the person in whose majesty one could see a reflection of the divine. And away from the city of their birth and growing up years, the exiles had little foundation for hope and conviction that their God could still act with power. So the prophet challenged them and challenges us to consider, to what are we paying attention? What are we looking at and listening to? And like Isaiah, but more recently, J.B. Phillips confronted us with the same indictment in his book, Your God is Too Small. The prophet is persistent in his message. God can change all that. Even if the young grow weary and faint, God can and will give them strength and vigor. Trust in the fact that God will change weakness into strength. So Isaiah paints a vivid picture, saying that the exiles' revivification will feel like being carried on eagle's wings. Running toward the goal of return will not even be felt as a strain. And one can almost hear the welcome beat of divine wings as the exiles are being borne aloft to return home. Yes, things change and don't remain the same. And the call of God is a call to become, right? To move and live fully and joyfully as God intended. And like the exiles, our journey into the future that we keep on slipping into can reflect the goings on in a nest of eaglets. Now, I gleaned this information. I'm not an eagle expert, but I learned some really fascinating facts about eagles and their growing in their nest and what the mothers do to prepare them in a Turning Point daily devotional from some time ago. And so this is where I'm getting my info, and I trust it. See, though many of us have seen pictures of a huge eagle's nest high in the branches of a tree or in the crag or of a cliff, few of us have gotten a glimpse inside. Now, when a mother eagle builds her nest, she starts with thorns, broken branches, sharp rocks, and a number of other items that seem entirely unsuitable for the project. But then she lines the nest with a thick padding of wool and feathers and fur from animals she's killed, making it soft and comfortable for the eggs. And by the time the growing birds reach flying age, the comfort of the nest and the luxury of free meals make them quite reluctant to leave, right? That's when the mother eagle begins stirring up the nest, or as we might put it, she stops cooking with cheese, right? And with her strong talons, she begins pulling up the thick carpet of fur and feathers, bringing the sharp rocks and branches to the surface. And as more of the bedding gets plucked up, the nest becomes more uncomfortable for the young eagles. And eventually, this and other urgings prompt the growing eagles to leave their once comfortable abode and move on to more mature behavior. Now, mother has a big job on her hands because one of those little eaglets has to be the first one out of the nest. The first eaglet walks over the edge and he must fly. And as these eaglets watch their mother, beating within their breasts is a desire to do what she's doing. And suddenly over the nest one comes, fluttering his wings as fast as possible. He tries to fly. He makes it for a moment, then suddenly his mother sees him faltering. And like a rocket, she zooms down beneath him, spreads her wings, and catches him. Higher and higher until she removes her wings and lets him try again. Now the prophet Isaiah must have watched eagles soar over Israel and observed the young cling to their mother or wait upon her and hope in her, to trust in her watchful and attentive care, to be dependent upon her. And this is no passive and inactive posture. Waiting upon the Lord changes us and changes things to the point of renewal. This dynamic waiting initiates the transformation process of molting and the growth of new feathers. And ancient people saw this as a symbol of spiritual renewal. Your youth is renewed like the eagles, said the psalmist in Psalm 103, verse 5. Friends, it's not our strength that will carry us higher and higher, but the Lord's. Our responsibility is to spread our wings. Spread our wings of faith and leave the nest. Move out into the wide world of new possibilities and renewal. Let God's strength take us where we never could go on our own. And if we're failing or foundering or flailing or feeling weak, let us exercise our hope in the Lord. Allow God's strength to lift us up. Soaring by faith means setting our sights on heights we never could reach without God's help. The late pastor and writer Alton McEachern wisely points us to these assurances. In crisis, the Lord delivers us. We mount up with wings like eagles. In busy times, the Lord delivers us. We run and do not grow weary. In routine times, the Lord delivers us. We walk and do not faint. Faith, he contends, is tough-minded trust in the eternal. In his poem, Eagle Free, Bill Harvey reaches beyond his grasp to touch the unsearchable understanding of God's way with us in this poignant and tough-minded reflection. An eaglet in its downy nest surveyed the scene below and asked with animated zest, "Oh, mother, I would know, will I someday begin to fly as high and far as you?" The answer came, "Of course you'll fly, for that's what eagles do. High born you are, and high you'll stay, and higher still you'll go, and never know an earthbound day, nor crawling to and fro, now dashing down, now soaring high, now floating on the air, now flying where you will to fly, now free to do and dare. I'll take the down from out the nest and let the thorns protrude. I'll let the thorns disturb your rest and halt your nesting mood. Then soon you'll climb upon the edge and stretch your pinions out. You'll totter on the eerie ledge and ponder space and doubt. Then with a wing I'll knock you off to flounder, flap, and fly. And with a swoop I'll pick you up and never mind your cry. I'll put you on the perch again, then knock you off the nest to see if you will stand the strain and stand the acid test. I'll give you opportunity to prove that you can fly, and then a final chance to see if you will fly or die. I'd rather rugged, jagged rocks would claim you as their own than bear the taunts and jeers and mocks that say you've never flown. But fly you must, and fly you will, and conquer gravity, and know the zephyr's golden thrill, and fly for all to see. My eagle child, this word I give, keep looking to the sky, for though an eagle flies to live, an eagle lives to fly.